Hey everyone, you're listening to On Their Behalf, formerly known as DNA, a True Crime Podcast. Please enjoy.
Hey everybody, I'm Devin the D.
And I'm Asia the A.
And welcome to our podcast. I wanted to say, last time, I don't know if it made it into the episode, but we were talking a little bit about my grandfather.
Okay.
And
it didn't. His I cut it out.
That's all right. You know, I don't know if you audience know, but sometimes we have to cut stuff out because we could talk to each other for 10 hours nonstop. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. We have to shrink some things down. But my aunt texted me and she had sent him the podcast and listened to it. And he loves it.
Oh,
and he was like, I don't know anything about new media. Aww. But he started listening to the podcast. So hi, Grandpa Billo.
Oh, that's so sweet. Hi.
I know. It's so cute. So I just wanted to say, what's up? Hey, Grandpa Billo. Thanks, Aunt Sandy.
What's up?
This is a whole family affair.
Yeah, definitely.
Isn't that cute?
Isn't that so adorable? I love that.
Oh, hey, if you're listening right now, press pause and go rate and review us. Just do it right now, and then by the time you're back, we'll be getting going.
Yeah.
We always say it at the end, so I was like, oh, I got to do it at the top.
Yeah, I like that. Switch it up a little.
Whatever. Yeah.
Which we definitely are, because my story this week.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Tell me what it is.
You're going to be angry, so I'm going to need you to, like, be as angry as possible. Like, be angry. I want you to be angry. But
right. Okay.
It's going to be that. But it's a little bit different than what we usually tell. So
okay,
this week I'm gonna tell you the murder of Jeff Hall.
Oh, I don't know about this one.
Really?
So I was wrong. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I had a theory that we were gonna pick the same case this week.
Oh, okay.
But we didn't.
All right.
So now I'm excited to hear. Oh. Oh no.
Yeah. So it's May 1st, 2011, in Riverside, California.
That's.
It's very close. It's about 4 a.m. when 10-year-old Joseph Hall gets out of bed, sneaks quietly into his parents' bedroom, and takes their loaded Rossi 357 Magnum revolver off the top shelf of their closet. He sneaks quietly back out of the room, goes downstairs to where his father, Jeffrey Hall, is asleep on the couch. He cocks the gun and shoots his dad in the head behind his ear. He then goes back upstairs to his parents' room where his stepmother, Krista McCary, is sleeping. He shakes her awake and he calmly says, quote, I shot dad. This story is obviously a little bit different than what we've told in the past because this is actually a white family. Mm. And I actually found this case because I was searching for something to do this week, but I was trying to go a little bit different and not do like child murders. Because I've done the Freeway Phantom and that scarred me for life, so I'm trying to like stay away from it. But so I came across children being murderers, and I was like, what?
Oh my god!
And there's a huge list of children who are murderers. So, but this one is so insane that I had to tell it. So, Krista, the stepmother, calls 911. They did a 60-minute special on this case, and I watched it. I started watching it a few days ago, and then today, or last night, I actually finished it really late, like 3 in the morning. It's like my bedtime stories. I like to like listen to crazy things like this before
it's
I go to
soothing.
Bed. Yeah.
Makes you feel safe.
Yeah, for some reason it's weird. So she calls 911. Obviously she is very distraught. But it like weirdly, because the 60 Minutes had the recording of the 911 call, so I listened to it like 8 times because I'm like, what is happening?
Oh my God.
So she's calling, she's distraught, she's just like, my son just shot my husband and he's bleeding, please send the ambulance. And then the 911 operator is like, how old is your son? And she says 10. And then the 911 operator asks her again because she's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, how old is he? And she goes, he's 10. Like, she screams it. Like, he's 10. But weirdly, in the background, it sounds like there's a child laughing.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Oh, no.
But I'm not sure, because it's like, it sounds like they're laughing, but then it also could be like that hysterical crying as well.
Yeah.
Because, like, after listening to it a couple times, I think the whoever it is says, oh, no, daddy.
Oh,
so
my God.
So I'm not sure if it was Joseph or because they do have four other kids.
Oh, my God. I have chills. That is. They have four other kids?
They have four other kids.
Oh,
not
my God. Oh,
all
no.
of those children
oh, no.
are Krista's. But
this is a terrible story.
I know. I'm telling you, it gets.
Not like story, but like case.
It's. Oh, it gets so much worse. So, they do have four other kids, so it could have been, like, one of them because of, like, they were woken up by the gunshot mm-hmm. or because of how hysterical Krista was. But when the police arrive, obviously Jeff is dead on the couch, and they find Joseph hiding upstairs in his room under the covers.
Aww.
And he's... Obviously, like, the way that they describe it in the 60 Minutes episode is, like, he is kind of calm in a weird mm-hmm. way, but it also could be shock. Like, it's not really, they're not really sure. But he mm-hmm. describes in great detail, like, what happened. He tells them that he used his four fingers to cock the gun, that he pointed the gun behind his dad's ear, and he pulled the trigger with two fingers.
So he's, like, very present and has
yeah.
a lot of, like, thought. So, mm-hmm. ooh, that's, like, what is happening that made this kid do this? Oh, no.
Let me tell you.
Oh, no.
So the detective said that this was definitely not one of those cases in which, like, the kid found the gun and thought it was a toy and it just, like, went off by accident. The officer said, quote, there is no evidence that this was anything but intentional, end quote.
Oh, my God.
So
that is like a statement.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
So Jeffrey Hall was a 32-year-old plumber living in Riverside, California. If you don't know where that is, it's like an hour east of L.A. He was described as a loving and devoted father, family friend. Like, they all say that he was personable and charismatic. His sister does a interview with Leslie. I think that's how you say her name. Leslie Stahl. Oh, shit. That's a typo. I spelled her name wrong. Her name is actually Leslie Stahl. She's, the interviewer for 60 Minutes, and the sister says that he was a great father, and she just couldn't understand how they all didn't see this coming, and, like, how this is even happening.
Oh, no.
So, Jeffrey Hall was clear about his views and politics, and he never really wavered from that belief or his beliefs. And he didn't really care if people disagreed with him or if they had a problem with what he believed in. So your question as to why his 10-year-old son would kill him? Well, it's because he wasn't really what everybody was describing him as.
Big shocker.
Yeah.
Wow. Who would have seen that coming?
So Jeffrey Hall was the leader of the California chapter of the National Socialist Movement, the nation's largest neo-Nazi party.
That is not what I was expecting.
Nope. I figured.
Oh my gosh. Maybe that's the laughter on the 911 call is me in the future, just being in shock.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Whoa. Okay. Hello.
So let's dive real deep.
Not cool. Don't do that, anybody.
No. So let's dive a little deeper into Jeff here. Mm-hmm. So Jeff was quoted as saying, quote, "I want a white society. I believe in secession. I believe in giving my life for the secession." End quote.
Oh, well, wish granted, sir.
He held many hateful rallies, spewing hate for illegal immigrants. Also patrolled the U.S. border for people trying to cross the border illegally.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He would hold monthly meetings in his house mixed with some other white supremacist friends that he had and members of the Ku Klux Klan. So they, at these like meetings, they would play like Nazi party games.
Oh my God, what?
Yeah, and they would like dress up and they would like, I don't know, I don't even, whatever. But he said, quote, "This isn't dress up. This isn't a game. We are fighting for our children's future," end quote.
And yet they're being, like, fancy pants. Have you ever seen The Producers?
Yeah.
It's, like, a musical.
Yeah, the musical, yeah.
And they're trying to, like, fraud old people out of their money and, like, produce a flop musical. And so they go to this, they find the worst play by a neo-Nazi called Springtime for Hitler. And, like, the whole play is, like, Hitler prancing around in the flowers. And it's, like, Springtime for Hitler in Germany. And it's a huge success because it's so fucking ridiculous. And then, obviously, their plan fails.
Yeah. But
that's what that sounds like.
Yeah.
Like, where they literally think, like, because that the play and The Producers was written in all seriousness.
Yeah.
And, like, the guy that wrote it thought it was going to, like, bring the Führer back or whatever. And this sounds exactly like that. Just people so out of touch.
Yeah.
And do not.
Completely.
Cannot, like, understand the ridiculousness of it. It's like you might as well be prancing around in tin foil hats and being like, "This is serious.
Yeah.
The aliens are gonna get you." Which actually, now that we know that UFOs are real, because they're trying to like divert our attention from the virus, maybe that's not so crazy. But neo-Nazism is crazy.
Oh.
The Producers is great.
Ridiculous.
And
Have you seen Jojo Rabbit?
Yes.
Ugh, so brilliant.
That was not what I expected. I was expecting it to be much more farcical, but it had a lot of heart.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that because it wasn't just like a total, I think that they handled it better than I expected, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very well done. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say I'm not Jewish or of Jewish lineage, and I don't know how I would feel if I were and I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like don't expect anybody to want to relive their trauma and like in a silly way. So
true. Yeah.
You know.
There's definitely two sides to everything that's done this way.
Right.
So.
Right.
Except
for neo-Nazism, because that's only bad.
Yes. Completely. 100%. So there's a bunch of videos on this guy. Like, you can go on YouTube and just type his name in, and there's, like, hundreds of videos.
And he wasn't hiding at all?
Nope.
He was just, like, out?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope. And there were so many, like, TV reporters and, people who would come in and interview them. It was so crazy to watch this episode of 60 Minutes, because it was just, like, before any of this happened, they, like, reporters would go to his rallies, and they would go to his, like, there was a reporter that, like, got, I don't remember her name, but she, like, got really close with them and basically, like, infiltrated them and started to record their meetings. And but they trusted her, so like they would be like, oh yeah, she's gonna record the what, and it's just, it's absolute insanity. So there is a video of one of the rallies in 2009, and it's showing Jeffrey Hall yelling into a megaphone. And I read on Morbidology, which I think is another podcast who also covered this case. Mm-hmm. I didn't listen to their episode because I didn't find it until later on in my research. But I do have a bunch of quotes and stuff that I pulled from their website. So I want to definitely give credit to them. But they on their website, they said that there was a Hitler emoji on this megaphone that he was using, which I was like
a sticker?
Yeah, like a sticker that was on the side, like a big sticker on the side of the
megaphone.
Oh
my God.
That was like a, and I was like,
that's
what?
Disgusting.
But basically he's just like, you know, hyping up the rally. It's a pro-white America rally. And the part that really, I mean, all of this is disturbing, but what really gets me is every single one of them do the Hitler salute. And it's just like, oh my God. Like, is this real life? Like, I'm watching it and I'm like, I want to believe that this is not real. Like,
I just don't, like, what happened? Like, that is some deep-seated, like, issues for people to be standing there and doing that. Whether it's, like, beliefs passed down from your parents and they're so ingrained, or it's, like, you're finding community because there's so much like self-hatred that you have to put it out on other people. Like,
it's
that's
so crazy.
Insane.
It's
and
so
it is
crazy.
Chilling.
But he did tell the LA Times that, quote, "I want a white nation. I don't hide what I am. I do not water that down," end quote. They said that Hall was a rising star among the white supremacists. Honestly, it gets worse. He devotes his life to the movement. He ends up bragging at one point in one of these meetings, and like, you can go online and watch because somebody was there recording all of these meetings. So you can see him like in his house. Basically, there's like a bunch of people like sitting in like chairs and rows, and he's like preaching to them almost. But he does brag at one point that he taught his son Joseph how to shoot a gun, and that he said that he at one point brought Joseph on one of his patrols to the border, and that's where he would teach him how to shoot.
Oh my God.
And he said that he brought his son so that he could help him protect the country from immigrants. He said, quote,
my
son
God.
Was able to operate a Gen 1 night vision and the infrared scope. At the age of 9, my son is out at the border, end quote. Yeah.
Just stop it.
It's crazy.
Just stop it.
So there, at that point, there were about 10 kids, like, under the age of 10 that were, like, ever reported having shot and killed one of their parents. From like 1986 was like the last time that had happened. I might that date might not be right, but I feel like I remember them saying that in the 60 Minutes episode. So but none of them were raised by a crazy Nazi. So according to Jeff's mother, the reason that he became a part of this movement was because when the housing market crashed, he lost his job. And I literally laughed out loud when she said this, but she said, quote, "Poverty is really a scary thing."
Oh my God.
And I was like, yeah,
go
no shit,
take
Sherlock.
Care of your son and teach him better.
Seriously, like half the country feels that way, but not all of us resort to this bullshit.
Exactly what I mean, though, where it's like fear-based, it's very selfish, and then he's being fed like the like Mexicans are taking your job.
Oh my God, yeah. Bullshit. And like, I'm sorry, but being poor is not anybody's fault. And you can't blame that on the Mexicans, because I'm pretty sure that if you were offered a job to work in a fucking field for less than minimum wage, 12, 16 hours a day, you would pass up that job because you would think it was beneath you. So don't act like they're stealing jobs from you. They're doing the jobs that you fucking lazy, racist assholes won't do.
Exactly. So,
to be honest,
they're literally the people that right now are feeding us.
Yeah. Like, they are the backbone of this society, and you will never, ever, ever be up to that standard.
No.
Even if you decide that you want the world to be white, you're never, ever gonna come to that ability, ever.
Mm-mm.
And I said it, and I don't care what anybody says. I don't care if you disagree with me, whatever.
No, it's totally true. And it's also, like, they're not the people that caused the economic crash in the first place. Those are the rich white people.
Mm-hmm.
So how about you be mad at those guys?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you want to fight for change is going to benefit everybody.
Yeah, and not just you, because that's what's happening. You're only thinking of yourself.
Literally only.
Yeah. He was a construction worker, and after this crash, he was just having a hard time finding a job, and he said that the reason was because the Jews and the other non-whites were responsible for thinning the job market.
Oh, see, that's what it is the Wall Street's run by quote-unquote Jews.
Yeah.
That's that thinking. Yes, okay. Mm-hmm. Ah, ha, 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 fuck you.
Yeah.
I hate you.
One of the leaders of the movement, another one of the leaders, he did an interview on 60 Minutes, and he said that their goal was resisting the, quote, browning of America.
Ooh!
I don't remember this guy's name, but to be honest, I don't really give a shit. So, but he said, quote, what Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton do for the black people, we do for the white people, end quote.
Oh my God.
It's not funny. It's just so.
It's just so backwards. Ridiculous. Like, how can you.
Yeah. Yeah. They're delusional, all of them.
It's so delusional.
And it's so funny because in this interview, so I forget her name now again, Leslie. She's reading to him basically like a printout of whatever their movement stands for and like what they want. And
who's basically, she talking to at this point?
She's talking to the guy that said that he's doing Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton do. I don't remember his name. And like I said, I don't really care. But so she's reading this to him. And it's basically them saying that all non-white people need to leave the country, that they need to get out because this is their world, this is their land, and they, like...
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah. But then she said, and it's just like, it's so fascinating to watch his face because she's basically like, so what you're saying is that all black people, anybody that doesn't have white skin should leave the country. And he's like, he kind of has this like dead look on his face, like just dumb looking. And he's just like, yeah. And then she's like, but our president isn't white. Our attorney general isn't white. So like, you're saying that they should leave? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. And he's like, and she asks him, like, so what do you feel about the Jewish community, like Jewish people? Mm-hmm. They're white, but he says, yeah, but they're their own, they're a race of their own, and they need to leave too.
Oh my God.
But it's just, it's so ridiculous, but at the same time, it's like fascinating. But the only reason why it is because none of this is true. And none of this is like, they literally don't have a leg to stand on, but they're still trying to run.
Yeah.
It's like the equivalent of like, somebody just chopped off my legs, but I'm going to still try to run this race, even though I have nothing to back me up.
No, because it's literally all fear based. Mm-hmm. But the scary thing for me is that it's like, while it is so ridiculous, there are more and more people that are buying into it. And also being open about it.
Yeah. And like, they were very blatant. Like, There was no hiding this. They were doing rallies all over California. And this was the California chapter. So there is many, 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 many more of these people who are trying to basically obliterate anybody that's not white. And it just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense.
I think, too, something about California is that it's like the major cities tend to be very liberal, but the rest of the state is very conservative.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, Riverside, while it is in, you know, a sort of metropolitan area, I would say is more conservative. Whereas, like, this guy would not be as tolerated in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And, like, especially if he was out in the open. But in Riverside, I feel like there's a little more, like, you know.
It's just insanity.
Yeah. Not that this is, like, equivalent to being a Republican. I don't, that is not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. No. But.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're not really going to find a liberal neo-Nazi. Maybe you are. No.
Maybe. I mean.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Jeff said, quote, "We are proud of who we are. We are tired of white guilt being shoved on our children and multiculturalism. We can't see any reason for it." He says, quote,
"I'm sorry. Have you ever had a taco?" Like, that's seriously. Just, that,
oh my gosh.
The door is cracked a little if you have ever eaten any other sort of food. Are you going to, like, survive from, like, borscht the rest of your life?
Trevor Noah from The Daily Show said that he thinks that there should be, like, a law passed that if you're racist, you're not allowed to eat any of their food. So, like, don't...
Absolutely.
Don't touch a burrito. Because you don't like Mexican people. Why would they...
Rice?
Why would you, they should
gone.
Be able to... you can't... You can eat potatoes.
Gone.
You can eat potatoes.
No, because
that's
potatoes...
It.
Okay, wait. Actually, I was like, where did potatoes come from originally? Because you always equate them with Ireland or, like, you know, Eastern European countries, whatever.
Yeah.
I looked it up, and the actual potato plant originated in Peru.
Oh.
So you can't even eat that, bitch.
Water.
Water. Because guess what? We are all African, as Shakira says in her Waka Waka song. I don't claim Africanism, anybody. I'm not African. Can't say that. I'm making a joke. Nope.
She's just kidding. He says,
I'm, like, so riled up right now.
I know.
I, like, hate this guy so bad.
I know. And it's because I love that the way I thought about writing the episode, I was like, I'm going to make her kind of feel bad for this guy at first. And then...
I know. I was a little bit like, you know...
Like, oh, there's got to be a reason that his son killed him.
Yeah.
But, like, you feel bad. Like, at first, you're like, damn. Like,
cause it,
nobody
you
deserves to be
it
shot
sound
in
like
the head.
That kid was so creepy.
Yeah, yeah. But, nope, not his fault. So Jeff does say, quote, at the end of one of his rallies or meetings or whatever, he says, "Get your Glocks cocked and be ready to rock. We are going to the border. That's how we do it."
That is, like, the whitest, most dad thing ever.
It's so ridiculous.
Oh my God.
And, like, in the video, he looks so proud of himself that he came up with that. And I'm like, what?
He, like, practiced it in the mirror.
Yeah.
Like, honey, what do you think about this?
Yeah. I'm like, okay, dude.
Jeez,
sit down.
Ridiculous.
So just 12 hours before Joseph Hall murders his father, the New York Times came to their house to interview Jeffrey and basically, you know, interview some of the people that were a part of the meeting. And they end up not interviewing, but the interviewer meets Joseph for the first time, and he starts to show off his leather belt bearing silver insignia of the Nazi SS that his father gave him. So he's like...
The kid starts doing this?
Yes, Joseph is, like, talking to the reporter and is showing off this belt that his dad got him.
Huh.
Yeah. So Let's talk a little bit about Joseph, because I feel... I don't know how I feel about Joseph, to be honest.
Okay.
And we'll probably have to, like, discuss it and hash that out. But even though he was, like, kind of bragging and seeming like he was a part of everything that his dad stood for, mm-hmm. the thing that he didn't really tell anybody or nobody really knew about was how abusive Jeff was to his children.
Oh.
And unfortunately, Joseph is the one that got the most of that abuse. Mm. But honestly, I feel like it started from the time he was conceived, because his mother, his biological mother, used drugs while she was pregnant with him. So according to a few sources, she consumed heroin and meth and LSD and smoked pot and drank through her entire pregnancy.
Oh, no.
He had been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactive disorder and a low average intelligence. He was a really troubled kid. I mean, and it was kind of well known. Like, everybody that, you know, spoke about who Joseph was, and they couldn't, like, it wasn't like these people were like, we can't understand why such an innocent little boy would do something like this. It was mm-hmm. kind of, everybody was in agreement that, like, yeah, this was, we feel like this probably would have happened at one point. We just didn't think he'd be this young, pretty much.
That something like that would happen.
Yeah.
That, just that combination of things, like,
I know,
substance on a kid or a fetus, and then, like, a father like that.
Yeah.
Just setting him up for failure.
Mm-hmm. He was, like, thrown out of, like, school. Like, from the mm-hmm. time he got into school, he was thrown out of, like, every school. And it was pretty much, like, he would throw tantrums, and he would, like, abuse the children and the teachers. Mm-hmm. One report said that he tried to strangle one of his teachers with a cord. And he, like...
Yeah, I mean, one of the things from, like, fetal alcohol syndrome I know is that... the part of your brain that processes emotion mm-hmm. isn't formed enough, and your impulse control portion of your brain is also not formed enough. So that makes complete sense why if he's feeling frustrated like that, that's
the reaction. He acts out like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he, like, stabbed his sister at one point. He, like, would stab children in school. He would, like, beat them up. It was just not...
Mm-hmm.
And he just got kicked out, and basically...
And at home, the dad is probably encouraging that kind of behavior against certain types of people.
Mm-hmm. And he, at one point, when he got, like, kicked out of the last school, they recommended that he be homeschooled, and guess who homeschooled him?
The plumber.
Yes. Yeah. So, in... the 60 Minutes interview, so Leslie interviews one of the detectives as well as some, like, child psychologists, and she says, quote, so he was born a match and his home life lit it, end quote.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
And I was like, wow, that was powerful.
Wow.
That was really powerful.
Yeah.
He was trained in his beliefs as, you know, the white supremacy that his dad, like, drilled into him. Mm-hmm. And apparently they, like, there was complaints made to social services about him, I'm sure from, like, school and teachers and friends. And, like, they all made reports about what could or might have been happening in that household, and nothing was ever done. So Jeff and his ex-wife, Leticia, were in the middle of a custody battle at the time, too, because he was trying to get full custody of the kids. And there was some allegations of sexual abuse as well. So it's just like, it's kind of like a gray area there. So Jeff's mother, when she's interviewed in the 60 Minute episode, she says that she would sometimes attend some of her son's rallies or his meetings. But she really was, she says that she really was just there because she wanted to make sure that it was safe for her grandkids. Yeah, but then in the same sentence, she says, quote, she had the best time.
Oh, my God.
And it was like going to any barbecue in America.
Oh, my God.
End quote.
Oh, my God.
And then Leslie's like, but yeah, wasn't there like swastikas everywhere? And she's like, yeah, I mean, yeah. And she's like, do you not get that we're talking about Nazis right now? Like, yeah. Nazis. And she keeps saying it. And then the grandmother's like, yeah, I know. Like, she's just like, oh, I know. Like that. Like, not really.
What a luxury to just, like, not give a shit about anything.
Yeah. And she's like, yeah, I know. It's crazy, right? That we're talking about Nazis. It's crazy. And I'm like.
Are you kidding me?
I was literally like, my mouth was just open. And I'm like, what? Like, yes, it is. You don't understand how crazy this is.
Wow.
Like, seriously.
Wow.
Oh, my God. So April 30th was the last meeting that they had, like the last time that Jeff was seen on camera or seen by really anybody. And during that meeting, it was recorded. The kids are just like running in and out of the house the whole time. They're playing with, you know, all of the little Nazi stuff that they have going on. Jeff even shows them all this like Nazi glow in the dark t-shirt, and it all has like that like Nazi SS insignia on it. It's disgusting. But you know, it was like the mom was just like, yeah, nothing's out of the ordinary. This is just like what they do. And it's like, okay, but if you can call what you're seeing right now ordinary, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
Their home life was just really crazy, and it wasn't really good from the beginning. It didn't start there. Leticia Neal, who is Joseph's mom, she and Jeff had two children together, Joseph and Shirley. And they ended up divorcing at some time, and she ended up having twins with another man. And so after they were divorced, the twins that she had were hospitalized for some reason. No. So then Child Protective Services came into their home and ended up removing the children from the home because they found that, like, she had no electricity, she had no gas, she had no heat. The place was filthy. There was, like, maggots on dishes. The children themselves, they were dirty and malnourished and had bruises on them. And I'm getting most of this information from the Morbidology podcast website as well, because they did a really good job with, you know, finding a lot out about Leticia Neal and, like, their life, their family life. And at the time, I guess, Jeff had been arrested and on probation for driving under the influence. So then it's just, like, our first introduction that he also had drug issues. But it's, like, to me, it's just, like, that was kind of inevitable. Yeah. Like, there was no way that I could imagine any of these people. I mean, maybe, but, like, it was just, like, there's got to be something here.
Yeah. And I don't think you have two kids with somebody that's, like, using drugs, that's pregnant with your baby, and you're, like, stick around
and then you're
for
not,
it if you're not, like, on some level.
Yeah. And on board with it, obviously. So after he and Leticia are finished, he ends up getting sole custody of the two children, and he then remarries Krista McCary, who, you know, was the one that found him after Joseph shot him.
Proving that there's someone for everyone.
Clearly, I mean, geez.
Yikes.
This is, like, how all these psychopath killers are, like, married with, like, children.
Seriously.
It's crazy. But then him and Krista end up having three kids, three daughters. So now, at the time of his death, he had five kids. And
he's 32 at that point? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So after the shooting, after she calls 911, the police get there. They speak to Joseph. They take him into custody. He is taken to a juvenile hall instead of prison because he is a child. So there wasn't really a... Not that there wasn't one, but I just feel like their first reaction wasn't like to throw this 10-year-old kid in prison.
Well, that's standard practice. You take a kid. You can't bring a minor to prison.
Yeah, like, I feel like even though he's like kind of... I don't know. Like, I just feel like when they're like, he's calm and he's explaining all of this stuff, it's just like... You have to believe at one point that this might not be a kid that is all there. Like, even though they have no idea what's actually happening within this family.
Yeah, like, they should have taken him, like, 5150'd him and taken him to a psychiatric place. But I bet whoever, like, responded to the scene, I bet was some dopey kid, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, but when the police get there, they investigate. Search the house, and the house was disgusting. Like, apparently there were like dirty clothes everywhere, like old diapers that were like soiled diapers just like all over the place. They said that the house smelled like urine. And it's like, and then you want to think like, oh, he held meetings here, and none of these, like,
and that this is the
like,
superior is race, like, clean up your shit.
Exactly. Like, what?
If you're so great.
Like, how, yeah, it's just so crazy how detached they are from reality, because it's like, if you look at, I'm sorry, but if I walked into non-white family home, I guarantee you it wouldn't smell like piss.
For sure.
So...
And, like, there were four girls in my family growing up, and we had, like, a messy house because we lived there, but it's, like, we did not have filth.
No. Like, none of that was acceptable.
We were taught to make our
beds. And it's, like, yeah. Like, there was some sort of order and structure within, like, and I'm not saying that there's not a non-white family that could have a dirty house or whatever, but it's like, don't act like you're better than all these people, but then you have the audacity to be living in a house with five kids and it be in that condition.
I've been watching Hoarders recently, you know, just some light viewing. But it's always correlated to some sort of incapacity to take care of yourself, some sort of mental issue or trauma that you're trying to deal with. And it's a disease, and you can't break out of it, but it really also means the way they view the world is not reality. And so it fits perfectly with people like that they would be, like, living that way. Because their view of reality is not rooted in reality.
So, so the house was a mess. They said that there was beer bottles all over the place. They ended up finding... a great deal of weapons in the house.
Surprise.
Which is, like, not surprised about that. But there was an unloaded gun that was just sitting next to a box of bullets, which I'm like, you might as well just fucking load it.
Oh,
like, why? Like, I don't understand
that. Five kids running around?
Five children in the house.
Oh, my God.
And, like, the fact that Joseph even knew where they had the gun or where they kept it is just crazy.
Well, I feel like at 10 years old... I was, like, snooping around and whatever and, like, looking for shit to get into things. But it's, like, they obviously didn't take any, like, didn't lock it, didn't take any of the precautions that you're supposed to take. And they probably showed him being, like, in case anybody breaks in here,
like,
grab
this. Like, this is what you do.
Yeah.
Jeff is dead, obviously. So any of what the police are finding in this home, like, somebody has to go down for it. So Krista goes down for it. And she's charged with five counts of criminal engagement and four counts of criminal storage of a firearm. She's also convicted of, like, child neglect and having a firearm around a minor. And all of, like, yeah, you should. Like, you should have said something. Or got your children out of that situation. Like, I'm sorry, sweetheart. Like, I feel bad that you went, you know, we're dealing with an abuser, but, like, your children are involved. Like, I just, you should face charges for this.
Yeah. And it also is, you know, I think important to point out that, like, just because, like, taking away the political beliefs of this family, she mm-hmm. is facing something tragic. Like, her husband is killed. But that does not negate the fact that you are a caregiver and you are responsible for other lives and need to mm-hmm. act accordingly. And if you cannot do that, there are consequences. Mm-hmm. And I just I feel like every case comes back to, like, treat your children well, love your children and care for your children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just like, and he wasn't cared for. And it was just like, she neglected to not only protect her other children, mm-hmm. but now, you know, Joseph, who is her child as well, is mm-hmm. now facing criminal charges for murder because of the situation that he was in.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I don't know. It's just so, like, beyond insanity. I just don't, like, it almost doesn't register to me, but none of these cases ever do. So I guess
this is wild. Like, this is so wild. That just, like, all the puzzle pieces
mm-hmm.
for this, like, perfect storm. Oh, my gosh.
So, Joseph is they do interrogate him. They read him his Miranda rights. And they ask him, do you understand? And he's basically like, yeah, I understand. And they're like, okay, you can have a lawyer. And he basically is like, oh, I don't need, like, he doesn't have a lawyer present. A fucking 10-year-old being interviewed by the police.
I'm like,
he
waives
his rights.
What is that allowed? Where, like, at that age, that you can be read Miranda rights and, like, a child can waive? I don't
in
think
certain
that's
states. Yes.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell?
I know. But Joseph says that that his motive for killing his dad came from an episode of Criminal Minds that he watched.
Oh, no.
Yep. And in this episode, the kid shoots and kills his dad, who's abusing him, and he doesn't go to jail.
Oh, so he
doesn't get
thinks
in trouble
that's
for
what's
it.
Gonna happen.
So he just thinks that this is what I am gonna have to do to get out of this situation. Oh. I won't get in trouble for it.
Okay, first of all, don't let your 10-year-old watch Criminal Minds.
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely watching, like, Law and Order.
Did your parents know?
Maybe not at 10. No, definitely not at 10.
Like,
but
that's very
I was
young. That's fifth grade. Maybe. Fourth grade, fifth grade. Depending on where your birthday falls.
Yes, I definitely wasn't that young. But
also,
I was young enough where I was definitely watching. Yeah.
And how sad
but
that that, like,
didn't become
that's
a murderer.
Yeah. Well, not yet. Just kidding.
Not yet. Yeah.
No. But how sad that he literally is, like, searching for any way out and then
out
thinks
of this,
that's the only way. Which, you know what? Mm-hmm. Like, he already was taken away from his mom. Already, like, the state failed him again and just put him in another shit situation.
Yeah.
Like, who's next? Grandma? So his dad can still access him? And the grandma's just, like, marching around rallies eating hot dogs or whatever. Like.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird. It's just, like, such a messed up situation.
Yeah.
But they say that, like, while he was being interrogated, he really didn't understand what was going on.
Well, yeah.
And so when they said to him, quote, you have the right to remain silent, Joseph thought that meant that he had the right to stay calm.
Hmm.
So, like, you're talking to a 10-year-old that doesn't really understand...
Yeah.
His rights. He doesn't understand his rights regardless.
Right.
They also said that he said, when the police were interviewing him in the house, after it happened, he asked them, how many lives do people get?
Oh my God.
So, like, he just doesn't, like, he's 10. Like, I can't stress this enough. He's 10 years mm-hmm. old. Do you remember how you were at 10?
Oh my God,
there's
no
way that you understand any of this stuff.
No.
And all of this negative and hateful, like, lifestyle was drilled into this little boy.
Yeah.
And he didn't really know what else to do. And I just like, and he doesn't, and it's like, he doesn't know how to get out of the situation. He did what he was seeing and like on TV and yeah. within his life and his, what his father yeah. was doing. And he took matters into his own hands, but he didn't know that like what that actually meant, mm-hmm. you know?
And like at every turn, the system is just failing him because it's like the, like I said, like when he was taken away from his mom, that was an opportunity to change his life around and it mm-hmm. didn't work. And now he's like, okay, great. I'm going to try this way. Didn't work. Probably all the mm-hmm. teachers at school were so like overwhelmed because they yeah. don't have the ability to care for him the way he needs to be cared for. So they just have to get rid of him. And it's like, yeah. and now nobody is standing next to him and saying like, no, 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 you can't waive your right to an attorney. Like you need somebody on your side. And yeah, nobody is yeah. speaking up. Well, I don't know what the internal talk was. I hope somebody was like, this is wrong.
Yeah, yeah. So he is ruled, like they say after his interview, that he understands fully what's going on and what happened, and he should be held responsible for his dad's death. Mm. So they bring him back to juvie, and he waits there until his trial. When he got to juvie, he was so small and tiny, they didn't have shoes that fit him.
Oh my gosh.
So they had to go out and buy shoes for him, like sneakers to put on. Ugh. And when he got there, he asked one of the people working there if he was able to keep the shoes when he went home.
Oh my god.
So
he just and it's has just like no the, idea what's going
he
on.
He has no idea what's going on. And the fact that he was released saying that, oh yeah, he gets it. He understands. Yeah. So he should be held responsible. Then he gets to juvie and he's thinking that he's going to go home. You know, like he thinks that like, oh, they're just giving me sneakers right now. Yeah. Like I get new sneakers and I just have to stay here for a little bit.
Yeah. Oh my god, that is so sad.
I know. So during the trial, the defense lawyers, basically, they start off with like, we're going to do a guilty plea, but it's, an insanity defense. So he had a bout of insanity, shot his dad. He didn't know what he was doing, but that ends up getting thrown out because he planned it.
But here's the thing for me, okay, mm-hmm. right, is that with this insanity defense is that my understanding, or like I heard this somewhere, I don't remember, probably My Favorite Murder, but they were saying if a cop was standing right next to you and you still did the thing you did, that's insanity because your reality is so off kilter. And I feel like if a cop was standing right there, he would have still done it.
Yeah.
Because that was what he thought he was getting out, and he thought the cops were going to help him based on this Criminal Minds episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sure, I don't know what episode it was, but I'm sure, like, this kid getting off on shooting his dad and not having to face any consequences, the episode was probably written in a way that leaned more towards like the police were helping this little kid through something. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he just thought that that same scenario would have played out in this situation.
Totally.
Because at that, you're not developed enough. And he had already, they already know that he has like
cognitive
attention
issues,
deficit.
Yeah.
He has, you know, issues with those, that part of his life and like education, that why would they think that he was actually capable of standing trial for this? It's so sad. Mm-hmm. But during the opening statement, so the prosecutor basically was like, Jeff's neo-Nazi lifestyle had nothing to do with why his son did this. And that's their stance, is that like that had nothing to do with it. You know, it was because of the abuse, but the abuse is not a reason to murder someone, and he should be held accountable. And it's like, It's such bullshit. It's like,
it's like no matter which way you spin it, they like literally can't make him look good. And I feel like they probably tried to throw out the neo-Nazi stuff because then it becomes like about freedom of speech and First Amendment rights and stuff. But it's like, okay, you throw that out and he's still a fucking scumbag.
Yeah.
Like, you can have scumbags believe whatever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow.
So Krista does testify in his trial. She tells them that, you know, Jeff was addicted to methamphetamines. That he would often have, like, crazy, furious outbursts. And to the point where he would beat both of them. And she testifies that at one point she saw Jeff kick Joseph in the back.
Oh my God.
Like, really hard. And he basically was like, he kicked him because he was, quote, getting in the way or he was being too loud. So that was why he was like, kicking him.
Oh my God.
And it's
God.
Like, do you know kids make noise?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. But I'm sorry, and I know that I don't want to, because she's a victim too. I'm not trying to victim blame, but I just don't know if I would have been able to watch somebody do that to my child and not do anything.
That is such.
And
a,
I mean, I know,
well, again,
it's such,
though,
a touchy,
it's like,
area.
If your husband is addicted to meth, chances are
you are too. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm on so many different sides in this story. It's crazy.
I feel like for me, the marrying the neo-Nazi, I hold her responsible for entering into that lifestyle. She knew what she was getting into. But in terms of being abused and seeing your kids abused, that's a much more gray area. Yeah. Especially if your husband is like the king of the Nazis. Where are you going to go?
True. Yeah.
But I don't know.
King of the Nazis.
Clean up your house a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. But I found this out. So the day before the murder, Joseph actually told his sister that he was going to do it.
What?
Yeah. And she told him, like, don't. She told him not to.
Oh.
And he just did it anyway. And he, and apparently what happened that night, because Joe was like a partier and he was always drunk or high or whatever, that he went out.
Jeff, the dad, Jeff.
I'm sorry, Jeff. Yes, you're right. Okay. So Jeff, he went out. I know, it's the J's are messing
names.
Me up.
Yeah.
So he went out to like a party or something and ended up being locked out. So he like broke in and like came through a window or whatever and then like passed out on the couch. And that's why when Joseph saw him, he was like, oh, this is my opportunity.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know, because like all this is calculated. It's premeditated. It's all of the things that we identify for a psychopath that does things like this.
Well, you know, it's like, and the psychopath thing comes from like certain brain physicality and chemical issues in the brain, plus the way that you're raised. So he had both things going negatively for him.
Yeah.
Because there are people that are psychopaths, and there are people that have the brain thing that aren't murdering people.
Yeah.
So
my thing, the reason why I feel so conflicted is because, I mean, we've been doing this now, what, 12 episodes? And we, every time we talk about a murderer who has these same traits or has these same things happen, I'm always like, yeah, that son of a bitch needs to go to jail. But this situation is like, I feel bad that he was abused. Mm-hmm. I feel bad that the lifestyle that he has wasn't the greatest. Mm-hmm. And he still committed the same thing that all these other murderers do.
Well,
and I'm like, I don't want him to go to jail.
I know. But the difference, or maybe it's the same thing, is that, okay, like, so your brain physicality is messed up. And your home life is messed up. And there is no one to help you. The people that we're taught will help us in these situations can't actually help us. And it's not necessarily like the individual's fault in those times, but it's funding. It's the way the system is set up. It's the role of the police. It's who is the funding the police department, you know? It's all of that kind of thing. It's Reagan letting out all these people, forcing them out on the street when he closed all the mental institutions. It's like this history, years and years and years of people being mistreated and people with neurodiversity not being understood and not getting the help they need because people don't know what they need and the money isn't there because they're not deemed as like good members of society or people that can give back. So they're like, why should we spend the money that we're earning on people that aren't earning anything? And it all comes down to that and the money and just the system.
And it's
just
so crazy.
Overarching failure of the system.
Yeah. And it's so crazy that exactly what Joseph needed is the same thing that I'm sure his father and those white supremacists are fighting against.
Yep.
You know, his child was mentally ill. His child was suffering. And the one thing that he's fighting for is the thing that his son is lacking. And it's like, yeah, you fall under that category too. Just because you want to say that, oh, I want a white society, doesn't mean that you or your loved ones or the people around you wouldn't also fall under that category. And it doesn't matter what color your skin is. People, you know, mental health can touch you too.
Yeah. The Nazis brought people with disabilities, people with mental issues to the camps too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To be experimented on. Anything to be killed. They were not welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And you're exactly right. Is that it's like that Joseph would have been a target.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things I didn't write it down, but I read so many different articles. But one of the articles had said that Joseph, basically, he just didn't understand what he was doing, and he thought that what would happen is if, first of all, when he shot his dad, he didn't think that he was going to kill him. That he thought that he was going to get hurt, but be okay, and that he was able, basically going to get his point across, and then him and his father would reconcile.
Oh my God.
So, like, I don't even, like, even that thrown into there, I'm like, I don't even think that his intention was to kill him. I think he wanted to hurt him the way that he had been hurting for so long.
Yeah.
And it
Which,
just...
Which, like, from that just, victim perspective makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
Where you just
and
want
I don't
to be
think
understood.
That, yeah. And I think he... The way that the lifestyle that they led, guns and knives and all of these things were weapons, but not weapons that he ever really thought could end someone's life. Like, the way that they treated guns and weapons, it was more glorified rather than it being like, this is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this is something that could really hurt people. And I think that he just had a very light and lackadaisical way of thinking about weapons and fighting
because
and doing
I
all
feel
those
like,
things.
Yes, because, that's so smart. I feel like the smart of you, not of him.
Thanks.
But it's like, the weapons equal power. The weapons don't equal pain. And that, because to him, they're on top. They're going to be, they're not the ones getting hurt. They're the ones doing the hurting, which is just power.
Yeah.
Ooh,
scary. It's so deep and so heartbreaking that it's just like all around this whole story is just like Joseph's life, there was no relief, and in this story, it just doesn't end there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Joseph's defense lawyer said, quote, "If you were going to create a monster, if you were going to create a killer, what would you do? You'd put him in a house where there's domestic violence, child abuse, and racism," end quote.
Oh my God.
I know.
That made me tear up. That's so sad.
I know. It's so sad. Another reason, something that Joseph said, was that he was also afraid that Krista was going to leave his dad because of the abuse. So he thought that she's going to walk out of his life and my life, and then I'm going to have to stay here and live with my dad alone. And the fear of that, just like, he was like, I need to relieve us of this problem. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Joseph was found responsible for his father's murder. He was sentenced to 13 years, so he won't be eligible for parole until he's 20. Oh
my God. And then it's like, then you get to the point of like, okay, so he's raised in like the system, and who is he going to be now?
Yeah. I think he would be like, if he got out. Oh God. Well, I did read that he was undergoing some therapy in juvie, and that he was doing some programs that he was really excelling at. So hopefully inside of this, he's actually trying to, and as he's getting older, I feel like he would start to understand like the gravity of what he's done. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they're doing everything that they can and putting as much resources and money into making sure that he, when he does get out, because it's not like he's going to get out and he's going to be 70 years old. He's going to get out and be like, I think, like,
yes,
I
entering
forget
society
that,
with the rest of people his age.
Yeah. And it's just like, I think if he was up for parole, he would be 25 or 26 when he got out. Mm. So it's just like,
yeah.
That
whole... Well, if it's any consolation, my mom worked as a therapist in juvie, so I know that there are good people there. But it doesn't necessarily mean the prison system is a peach, let's say.
No, it's definitely not. Okay, so his lawyers did appeal this decision. They tried to bring it to the Supreme Court. That ended up being declined. But the reason is because they said, quote, there is not a 10-year-old on the planet who ought to be in a position of waiving a constitutional right without any advice from an adult, end quote.
Yes, yes.
Yes. He should have had a lawyer present. He should have had a parent present. Like, yes. There's no reason why he should have underwent that interrogation with nobody there.
No.
But they threw that out, and they basically were like, you know, he doesn't need an adult to waive his rights, pretty much. The police officers state
How
that he...
How is that allowed?
The police officers state that he was fully... like, aware and understood that he was waiving his rights to a lawyer. And it still doesn't make sense to me. I don't get it.
Just because a kid is saying yes?
Yeah.
Have you ever, like, strictly said anything to a kid? Like, I used to teach karate, and I would be like, do you understand me? And they say yes to... stop you from talking, to get you to
exactly
shut up.
my actually a couple weeks ago, I don't remember if it was my sister or my aunt, whatever, I don't know, but my niece was like, can I have ice cream? And it was like, no, you can't have ice cream because, you know, we haven't had dinner yet or whatever. And then she asked again, and my sister was like, okay, I already told you, no, you can't have ice cream. Do you understand me? And then she was like, yes. She literally walked out the room and came back 30 minutes later and was like, Mom, can I have ice cream? And it's like, what did I say? You know? And she's 12. She's 12 years old. And it's like, that's the level of, like, attention span that your child has at that point. Yeah. There's no way that this kid should have been subjected to that without an adult or a lawyer in the room.
That's
it
ridiculous.
Just doesn't make any sense.
I'm absolutely shocked at that.
Yeah.
I understand, like, 16, 17, mm-hmm. maybe 15, but it just should be like, why isn't there just a blanket statement of, like, minors have different Miranda rights?
Yeah. And, like, I know that, like, it varies state by state, but some states allow minors to be interrogated without an adult in the room, and it just doesn't make sense. I know that New York is not one of them. I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously, California is not, but... and that could have changed by now, because I actually did not look that up,
maybe.
Which would have been a good idea, but it could be different now. So, that was 10 years ago.
It just reminds me of... Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. It reminds me of, did you watch Making a Murderer?
Yeah.
The Brendan Dassey, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And where he's being interrogated and they're obviously leading him and everything. Yeah. And then he asks, like, do you think I'll make it back for, like, my math test to school? And it's just, like, he was older. Like, he was an older teenager, but he obviously had very, like, tough cognitive stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, they just interrogated him by himself. That's and crazy. I mean, making, like, we could have a whole episode on that.
Oh, but,
like,
yeah.
It's just like, why, I don't know.
It's crazy.
Like, ugh.
But Joseph's legal team, so they appealed it, but then the Supreme Court was like, we find that he was not coerced in any way, and they didn't, like, he confessed to it, they know that he did it, like, and he also understood that, quote, wrongfulness of his actions, and that he comprehended what giving up his Miranda rights meant, and which I just call bullshit on it. It's not like, and there's no, like, and there's really no way of knowing, because there was only one adult that wants it to be, you know, the police officer that wants to say, yeah, I did everything right. Mm-hmm. There's nobody else there to back up Joseph.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, it's so wrong in so many ways. But the grandmother now has custody of all four children because Krista, the stepmother, you know, admitted to leaving the loaded gun in the house. So she was prosecuted for that. The grandmother says that she still visits Joseph every week in juvie. But she felt like this whole process was just a constant struggle because obviously her son was murdered and she wants justice for him. But at the same time, that means that her grandson, like, she could possibly never see her grandson again.
Yeah.
But
she's also the woman that raised Jeffrey.
Yeah. So it's like, no. Well, this is funny because they asked her at one point.
That's so complicated.
I know. But they do ask her, are you still perpetuating this, like, Nazi lifestyle? And she said, no. She said, it's gone from this family forever. She says she's now raising conservative Republicans because California needs more of those, she says. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think so. But okay. I guess I'd rather you raise conservative Republicans than a Nazi. So
Nazis.
Right. So,
and honestly, like, bring your Republicanism to California because you're not going to change the state. Like, we're going to be a blue state, so.
Yeah.
Take them out of the swing states and come to California. We'll be fine.
Yeah. We'll still be all right. And, I mean, obviously, none of this matters in the sense of, like, who you believe. Like, whatever God you believe in and whatever, however you believe we are on this earth. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand how you as a Nazi or whatever, or white supremacist, can justify that. And I really spent, like, a lot of time thinking about this. Like, I think I just, like, sat in my apartment for, like, almost an hour, like, thinking about, like, trying to get into the mindset of a white supremacist or somebody who wants only white people to exist on this earth. And it just, like, I don't understand how you justify the universe, which is so complex and backed by science. It's backed by so many things. But you believe that the universe has made a mistake by allowing non-white people to be in existence. Mm-hmm. And also that you think that your problems somehow stem from the idea that the universe made this mistake. And the only way to cease that those problems is to fix the mistake, and you think by ridding the world of non-white people is gonna fix this. Mm. And it's just so crazy. And the idea that these people feel like their world is the most important and that the people of certain color are the only ones allowed to inhabit this world, and that it's their sole responsibility to execute that design of the world. Mm-hmm. And it just blows my mind that somebody is so narcissistic that they think that they're like such a small factor within our life and our world that they think that, oh, I'm up to the task of making this world full of white people and that's it.
Well, it's a cult, and, right? It's like that feeling, but it's like a cult that pushes outward, and it's like the Crusades. It's that's essentially like the Crusades was the first iteration of this belief.
Yeah.
Maybe not first, but like widespread. I don't know.
Yeah. So all I can hope for is that one day, even with all of our differences, people can just, for lack of a better word, get the fuck out of their own heads and, you know, stop thinking that your world is the only world that deserves attention or is the only world that's important. You know, you want a better world for your children is what they keep saying. Like, we want, you know, to make sure that our kids are taken care of and all of this stuff. And it's just like, then stop acting like an asshole and treat your children how to be human beings. I mean, listen, do I think Joseph should be in jail? No. Do I think that it was wrong that he killed his father? Yes. Do I think that he, in some small way, did us a favor by taking out a racist psychopath? Yeah. But at this point, nothing is black and white. Even if you want white to be the only color, everything has a gray area, and color does not matter when what you really should be focusing on is how to do your best to bring humanity back to the human race.
This week's episode was written by Asia Hamilton and edited by Devin Balsamo-Gillis.
With music by Holly Amber Church. If you'd like to see sources and pictures from this episode, please check us out on Instagram at DNA_podcast.
Please rate, review, subscribe anywhere that podcasts are available. See you next time.